Actually, hang on one sec.
Oh, here we go. Hey guys, I'd like to welcome to the show my second guest, senior political consultant, former Bernie Sanders state communications and spokesperson director, state director for Hillary Clinton, former Kennedy advisor, current partner at 1788 and JCN, Joe Kaizo, the Politics After Dark. Joe, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate you being here.
Happy to be here with you. I know the name is Politics After Dark, but it's pretty bright in here right now, so I apologize for not being on theme.
Got here. That's fine. I love it. I love it. And that's actually a good thing. Part of the reason I called it Politics After Dark is because we're in this dark period of time here. And I feel like we need a space to create new politics, to talk about new ideas, and to figure out how do we get out of this dark period and what is the world going to look like when we get out of here. So to me, Politics After Dark is that. It's that that realm for us Marian folks, and really anyone to come on board. I had a crypto multimillionaire on last time to talk about what should we do and how should we go forward. So a lot of it's that. Let me hop into the first question. Joe, you have over a
Sure.
decade of experience here, successful career in American politics. I guess my first question, a little personal, why do you keep fighting despite the ups and the downs? What keeps you going?
Look, because I think at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. We all want to live in a society where people have the opportunity to make tomorrow better than today. And using history as our guideline, yes, certainly there has been several ups and downs, but ultimately, tomorrow is always, in fact, better than today.
Bam, I think that's it. Let's dive in a little deeper. What does the better tomorrow look like? So the question here is essentially, what is that victory? I think about yourself as a C-suite level person. There's probably a lot of other people at the national State Department level that are doing similar high-level work for the Democrats. What's the lodestar for the political class right now that's not elected, but it's doing that senior level work? What does it look like in 10 years? What does the landscape look like that you guys want to achieve?
Look, I think we've got a real opportunity right now. I think we've got a real opportunity to step back and evaluate what is it that we stand for as Democrats and evaluate what policies do we need to fight for to bring this country together and to move forward. And I keep landing in this one single place of economic opportunity. When you look historically, when you look back historically, the number one driver that has typically unified this country is in fact economic opportunity and the belief that tomorrow is better. One of the ways you make tomorrow better is you invest in today. When you think back to Roosevelt, or you think back to Johnson, or think back to Kennedy, you see these pretty massive investments in these entities that serve as a force of good. And I think that part of what we need to consider as Democrats as we go and, try to map the road ahead is think about what those things are that worked well, what didn't work well. Because there is an appetite across this country to move forward. And look, folks say that there is a massive generational split. I partially agree with that. Bernie Sanders is in his early 80s, and he's filling stadiums and fields and everything else, from coast to coast, because people are unified by a message of hope and unified by a message of economic opportunity. And it's crystal clear that Donald Trump and the Republicans have set forward a policy agenda to focus on dividing us while they continue to go and enrich the oligarchy of this country.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. Some of that I've tried to cover in the podcast specifically. Senator Sanders has an actual vision for the country, so sort of a national plan there. I guess for my viewers, we really have dived into that idea of having a national plan, whereas Republicans do have it. They have a firm direction that they want to head in. They had Project 2025. Before that, they had Reagan and right-wing Christianity, the idea that greed is good. But for that side, there's always been some sort of central core that they've been able to unify behind, an actual vision, and they can point to policies. Even in their big tent party, they can say, we believe in that, immigration, cut taxes for corporations, and so on and so forth. The Democrats, on the other hand, at one point, I know we were talking about very briefly LBJ and whatnot, and you brought up the bigger things that have happened. But the modern Democratic Party, they seem to have gone from, and I say this cheekily, but yes, we can. Party to a party that seeks to moderate. They seek to reach across the aisle at every single moment to try to find common ground with folks who quite literally don't share their values. So it's this weird governing approach where you state that you have values and beliefs, And then when we look for the policy, we say, well, where is it? So I guess the question is this, despite the strategy of saying finding like a third way, right? The Clintonism, that find the moderation, despite that resulting in many losses, you know, presidential elections here, state seats, why is that the strategy of the Democratic Party? Feel free to throw neoliberalism under the bus, but seriously, why are we here?
Let me push back. I don't think that actually is the strategy that is going forward. I'm not actually clear that there actually, in fact, is a strategy. I think, you know, to use football as like an analogy here, we are going and playing for the down, not the entire series. I think if we, again, to use football, if we looked at the field from the booth way up high, we could see that the pathway forward and the direct pathway to going and holding on to power as a Democratic Party for generations is entirely rooted in expanding the tent. And expanding the tent means bringing some people into the tent who we happen to agree with 51% of the time. You know, looking back in the fall of 2010, Democrats controlled 5 out of 6 federal seats in the Dakotas. Yes, 5 out of 6 federal seats in the Dakotas. Big Democratic senators in Louisiana, in Arkansas, in Nebraska, Florida, South Carolina, 2 in West Virginia. The list goes on and on. Look, a Democrat in some of those states looks very different than a Democrat from Massachusetts or a Democrat from Illinois. The one thing that is for certain is the first vote that they will cast in Congress is for the Democrat to be the leader of the chamber, which, look, you know, the number one goal of a party going into a midterm is to fight like heck to try to go and either maintain or take over control of either one of the chambers. Because when you're in control of the chamber, you're in control of the gavels, you're in control of the flow of legislation and actually what the governing agenda is. I think a big part of our pathway forward is to look to parts of this country that you know, Democrats once were successful and we're not anymore. And think about why that is and think about how can we get back there.
Yeah, no, I think
and I do great. Think it boils down to economic populism.
I want to talk more about the economic populism and how that works. So I think about those 2010 seats that we once held during the Obama administration. And for me, and you know, tell me what you think, Obama came in on this populist energy, this energy of yes, we can. There's nothing that we can't achieve. He was able to point to the Clinton administration, sort of the modern Dems of the time and what they weren't able to do, whether it was like the Iraq war or reform healthcare, whatever it is, and say, I believe that, you know, there's a more perfect union out there. And he was able to galvanize that energy. And it felt to me, I was young, I was in high school, but it felt like folks believed that there was a new page, some sort of reform was going to happen. And the country, you know, would be different. The struggles that like working class people dealt with, paycheck to paycheck, unable to afford healthcare, those things would be dealt with not in a half measure way, but in a full measure way. And then you have Mr. Obama actually get elected and he passes, you know, ACA, which is Mitt Romney's Massachusetts healthcare program. And so you see the base itself was ready for something new, right? We held seats in red districts that we hadn't held before. And then we begin to lose all those seats. And you see the right wing take over, splash forward over so much history. And I say to myself again, you know, even to your point, what was the top-down strategy? What was the coach's strategy with the team owner and what have you? Because if you're Obama or one of the staffers, or Rahm Emanuel, a senior Democrat, you know, part member of the DNC, you had a moment in which you had this very popular guy. What was the grand national project policy that people were supposed to look back and go, Obama got that done, and that's why I'm a Democrat? Because he was elected to bring hope and change quite publicly, but then he moderated, he chose to do that. And so that's why the question is, how did we get here? I mean, you have a base that for over 20 years here has said, this is what we want, something new, and then you moderate. So again, I got to get to questions here, but I take a look at Hillary Clinton and I say to myself, well, again, you had that populist energy that was so close to beating her in Senator Sanders' campaign, which you served on. So I guess to get back to a question, the Obama project, that neoliberalism, it kind of failed, right? I would say for the most part, his successors haven't been able to find sustained power in office and they've lost the cultural plot. Republicans have won the popular vote. They have a mandate. They're gaining more and more people of color going to work up on the other Republican side. And they're increasingly being considered the party of the working class. In response to that, what's going to be the Democratic vision? And we have a time now to reflect. And I guess I'm asking you questions. One, do we have that capacity in our party to reflect? Because it seems this Bernie Sanders thing has been roaring up for a good 10 or 12 years. And for whatever reason, we haven't embraced those ideas, whether they be, Medicare for all or what have you. Where is why aren't we able to embrace those ideas? Whereas, these friggin' Republicans are. I know I put a lot in there, and feel free to respond to anything.
Look, I think it's really important to begin here. Electoral politics and movement politics are two very different things. And Bernie Sanders is fundamentally correct, right? For the Medicare for All movement and bring people to together. At the end of the day, this is only possible if we in fact have a governing majority. And then when you think back to Obama, which you mentioned, he passed the Affordable Care Act, bringing healthcare to millions of Americans from coast to coast. In the subsequent midterm in 2010, Democrats ran away from the Affordable Care Act, and we got thumped. We lost 63 seats in the House, and we lost the Senate. In 2012, Democrats ran to the Affordable Care Act. The president was reelected. We gained back some of those losses in the House. We gained back some of those losses in the Senate. I think some of it is, the more we hold the true to our values, the better off we will be served, and we will be, greatly rewarded by, the electorate for that. When it comes to why aren't we going and embracing these issues? Look, I think we are. I think when you look at the Biden administration, I think there were 17 million jobs created under the previous administration, nine of which were COVID recovery. The balance. Sorry about that. Did you cut out for a
You know,
second?
you got, yeah, technology. I'll edit
Great.
it out.
There were about 16 million votes jobs created under the Biden administration, about 9 million of which were COVID recovery jobs. The balance were directly linked to good governance and good policy. Joe Biden was able to steer us out of a once in a generation pandemic. And, we were rewarded with that in the 2022 midterms. Democrats performed better in the 2022 midterms than any other party in a first-term midterm that we've seen in probably the last 80 years. And I think that's chiefly accredited to that. This all goes back to going in and expanding the tent, right? The more we've shrunk our tent over a period of time, the less we've been able to go and make our case. We used to invest in Democratic parties all across the country. So with the Democratic Party in the state of like Nebraska looks like is very different than what the Democratic Party and the state of Massachusetts looks like. Over the last decade, I'd argue to say in the last generation, we've seen a rollback in the investment and what that means. We're not out there going and recruiting to the way that we should. We're not going out there and building a sense of, a community the way that we should. And I think some of that is, we've taken the bait. Charlie Kirk often talks about transgender athletes. And he spent a great deal of time discussing that the first several, well, like these past several weeks, right? And the reason why he's talking about that is he doesn't want to discuss the fact that the stock market is losing a point in value every single day, and the retirements of people of this country from coast to coast is going down. I mean, consumer confidence is pretty close to an all-time low, and the true state of affairs is that we are less economically stable under Donald Trump than we have been in the last 4 years, or the last, 5, 6 years. The Republicans have been really good at trying to throw us off our game by going and throwing social issues at us, when in fact they are failing in their ability to govern.
So then here's my question there. And you said some really specific stuff. And I want to say, just for the channel, I've got a lot of comments. Everything Joe just said is true. Economically, we're worse off here. To the Democratic side, why are we not able to combat that? So I have my own thoughts, and I'll share some of them here as we're getting to the halfway point. The Biden administration was certainly, in my mind and many people's minds, a better administration than the Obama administration. There was less of this focus on, like, color of skin and ideology and things like that, and more liberal policies were passed. There's more of a fight for that. I'll certainly say that. But the messaging wasn't there, and it felt as if so much of it was rooted in this, we're bouncing back from COVID, we're battling Donald Trump, And that a little bit, it felt like that was the whole story. It felt like that was the end all be all. You didn't have, on the other hand, Biden come out and say something akin to, I'm going to give you a new deal. There's going to be a new deal, new 21st century vision for America. I'm Joseph Biden, and here's what I'm going to do for young families and young kids. And he's hopping on Twitch, he's hopping on Discord, he's hopping on Apple Podcasts like this to have these conversations. Instead, there was, to your point, we played ourselves and played the Republican game on the war front, right? We once had a policy of being anti-war to stretch it back to the early 2000s, right? We got to Obama came to power. We now find ourselves pro two wars and unable to explain the working class sort of domestic victories that we have, because on the one hand, maybe the messenger isn't there, maybe it's not wrapped in a 10-year plan. To your point, there is no, again, this is the first step, and in year two, it'll look like this, and in year four, there'll be semiconductor factories, and in year five, we'll have done this. There was no explanation of what you were doing. You were just doing things, at least not effective. And then secondarily, when you did speak to people, it'd be KJP, you know, Karina on the air, respectively, defending what many in the party view as a genocide, an outright slaughter of civilians. Regardless of one's opinion on that, you're spending energy conducting that, and then also funding a war in Europe, and you have many people who don't necessarily agree that World War III is on the other side of this. So you're finding yourself weighed down in all these things, and you're, to begin with, not a very effective messenger. So I think that's one point that I would make. Part of my thought is you're, the things they're doing may have been good, but it felt this is what I told my wife, and she said, "Don't say this," but it felt as if it was like an aging man looking back at his, realizing, ah, I should have done these things, kind of a dying man saying, ah, one last more shot to sort of undo the things I've done. Lest I forget, it was Biden that moderated in the 90s, locked up my father and bringing up black men and supported conservative bills that like NAFTA and things like that. So he's striving to bring factories and jobs back after having a career of sent those things overseas. And so it feels like it's you've realized you're reminiscing, but you're not able to communicate what maybe those failures were. Meanwhile, on the other side, you have these guys who do have a message. They're organized. They're ready. They have they have morals and values that they've not conflicted on. They don't find themselves trying to explain away why they support a war or don't. So I look at the party, and I look at these high level things, and I wonder, like frankly, how do I get to this point? They seem to be representing, in my mind, big business at the expense of the workers, even the expense of the base. You have this generation of young folks who can't afford houses, yet the focus is on Ukraine, right? As opposed to a national housing project. If I were running for U.S. Senate against Senator Durbin, for instance, I might say the senator's done a great job, but I'm going to push for a national housing expansion. Whenever you hear from Senator Jenkins, you'll hear me saying one thing: how am I going to get you into a $200,000 home right here in the Midwest, close to fresh water and lakes and schools and new factories that I want to build for you? And then I might say, we're going to build a brand new transcontinental train system. We're not going to fund European wars. We're going to copy European trains because you deserve that right here in America. And that's going to put money in your pocket. Now, Senator Durbin's talking about Ukraine and Israel. I want to talk about your pocketbook. Can your kid afford to go to college here in America? Harvard doesn't increase its freshman class despite being a multi-billion dollar institution. Give me your vote, and I'll put pressure on those guys to educate Americans, because you're American, and if you're going to be based here, you ought to increase that freshman class 2-3% every year. You've got multi-billion dollars. These are the new ideas that I've discussed here, and I wonder, is it time for, whippersnappers like me to go challenge Senator Durbin and Congresswoman Schakowsky and say, listen, you're fighting battles that are rooted in the 2000s, and folks want battles to be fought in the 2020s, 2030s. You don't have the foresight or maybe the energy to understand what people are struggling with, the urgency that people need you to react with. And so I wonder if maybe it's time for some of us to say, no, we don't have the money, but we probably have the ideas. We probably have the future, the youth, and the time to take a few losses, take it on the chin. But if it's going to be our country, we ought to stand up and challenge the folks that, in my opinion, respectfully, have gotten us to this desperate point. I spoke to Rana Epting, CEO at MoveOn, and I said some of this stuff. And so I, not to name drop her, but I wonder, Are these new ideas? Is this aggressive energy being discussed at the higher levels, or are folks playing the old playbook of fundraising and name ID and maybe ought to climb the ladder and wait? Or are we ready to wrestle back our democracy from the corporations that have invented these rules? And again, I'm preaching to the choir here, but you don't see Republicans play by the rules that we play by. Trump's never been elected office. Pete Hegseth seemingly is an alcoholic, which I hope he works on. But these are the folks that, they don't hold themselves back by lack of a degree or, a relationship with such and such high level person. They go for the kill and they're finding victory and success. And so I wonder if we hold ourselves back by these invented rules from battles of days gone by. What would you say to some of
Look,
that?
I think that there was a lot there. Look, we'll start with Biden first. Joe Biden did more for the working families of this country than any president in my entire adult lifetime, whether it was record low unemployment, whether it was tackling the cost of prescription drugs, whether it was bringing more manufacturing back to this country than we've seen in decades. I think that, when you strip away all of the drama of a presidential election, typically, the economy are our best tells, right? I don't think there's ever been a president reelected, or I don't think there's ever been a party reelected to the White House or a president reelected for a second term with inflation over five. So I think that, there was incredible amounts of drama and the assassination attempts and bombastic claims and disinformation, all sorts of things that were going on in the last cycle. There are serious historical indicators that, basically bared out in November. So do I think that there were a lot of problems last year? Sure. But I think that there were many things that were pretty much out of the control of people, as evidence as to how many swing states split their tickets. Right. I don't think that any of the besides Pennsylvania, I don't believe any of the down ticket Republicans were successful, right? Where, Donald Trump did win. Look, and then when it comes time for generational change, that's a theme that we keep on hearing. Look, generational change is important. I do think it's important to acknowledge that there are several legislators and several people in our politics who have given incredible amounts of service to this country. I would be wary to say this is an age thing, because as we talked about at the top of this, Bernie Sanders is 83 and he's packing stadiums, because and Bernie Sanders' ideas are not new, they're not fresh. It's the same stuff he's been saying for the last 40 years. I think what the American public is looking for is they're looking for bold action. Donald Trump is a performer. At his absolute, what it boils down to, he's a performer. There's no actual set of values, there's no actual set of principles, and there's no actual governing agenda. It is performance. It is say whatever you have to say to get the win for the day. I think a great example of that is TikTok. Donald Trump supported a TikTok ban until the Biden administration supported it. Then he went and opposed it. Never was able to go and articulate why he supported or he like right. But Donald Trump is incredibly slippery. Donald Trump's allies too are incredibly slippery. I mean, this whole signal gate we're seeing with Pete Hegseth, there's crystal clear proof that these people who were in charge are actually not qualified to be in charge.
Crystal
And
clear,
the
crystal clear.
direct ramification of that is working families of this country are going to pay the price. Your point about how, we've got to bring housing costs down, it is unclear to me which of Donald Trump's policies, rhetoric, or anything like that has actually been beneficial for working families. And we've done this exercise. The last time Donald Trump was president, what did he do? He cut taxes for the wealthy, right? Sure. He cut taxes for people. But keep in mind, those corporate tax cuts for corporations, the tax cuts for corporations were designed never to go and expire. Whereas the individual tax cuts for folks like us was designed to expire.
All this you're hearing, I 100% agree with. The guy's one of the fucking most. He's a performer. He's very good at his little actor. All that's happening, and I say to myself, why aren't the Democrats winning? We know this. I'm an intelligent guy. You say this to me, I'm voting for you. I'm voting. You can tell me go vote for like fucking. At this point, you can tell me vote for Tulsi Gabbard, be like, or something. Not John Fetterman. I had to think of the name. Bob told us he was a Democrat. What a day. But you can tell me to vote for some terrible, terrible moderate. I certainly would. That being said, I'm an intelligent guy. I'm in the game. What I see is that argument is effective, right, to the certain class of people. You have too many people who are living like paycheck to paycheck. So anecdotally, for me and for my audience, guys, I have my cousins on the south side of Chicago. Like, I love them. They live in poverty. I took them to a hotel and it's like, I'm like, you got to use our key card to get in. We're having like funny things and making little inside jokes about how to like enter the hotel, because these are experiences they've never had. And this is the truth for a majority of their friends. They've never left the States. They haven't gone to a hotel. Me taking them to Wrigleyville was their first Cubs game. Like, these are basic everyday experiences for people growing up in Evanston or like, Park Ridge here in Cook County in the Midwest. The reality of America today is that most Americans aren't going to do that. Most kids are not going to go to a Cubs game. They're not going to go to a hotel for the holidays. They're not going to go to Six Flags or go to Canada on a play. They won't host a French exchange student. The very dream that we sort of put on TV, the Gilmore Girls, the Disney Channel, raise your kid with a backyard, that sort of dream that we like to think America experiences is not, in fact, what America experiences. And it seems the Democratic Party doesn't have enough people telling it that, that it's not working. What we've been doing benefits people that are in certain communities, but it's not lifting up enough people. And at this moment, those people are so angry. They're so upset. These are, my twin who enlisted in the military, did 6 years, was a tech sergeant. He was going to OCS potentially. These are his white allies from Alabama and Texas who thought Dems couldn't enlist in the Army. These are poor working class brothers and sisters. And they hear about the legends of LBJ and FDR. And then they look to the Democrats and they literally see Nancy Pelosi and Kente Cloth, or people doing weird Black Lives Matter things. And what they don't hear is the things that Senator Sanders says, to your point, universal health care, raising wages, making college affordable, not even the best colleges, just a pathway to the future. Somewhere in the 80s or 90s, Democrats abandoned being FDR, LBJ Democrats with a head on their shoulders vision, and they adopted some sort of everyone will go to college cultural phenomena. Everyone will, we don't need blue collar jobs. This is what it feels like anyway to a lot of those people. And to me, my dad was a carpenter, a union carpenter in Chicago. I grew up on a carpenter's paycheck. The idea that there's a Democrat that wants my family to be successful, that feels true. But the idea that they thought how to do that for my family, I don't, other than Senator Sanders, there is no one I envision who sat down, who's gone, you're a young 30-year-old, you just graduated from law school, you want to have family, what are you facing? What's the average cost of a home versus for your parents? And how can we get it back to that? How can we create an economic reset for this next generation? One of the things that I go around telling people, I've been going across the country, I'm going to Cali now, is that I tell people the boomers, they had a whole economy built for them. Right. They had the silent generation, paid high taxes and invented the suburbs. Now, this deal that they constructed was mostly for white Americans. And I'm not afraid to say that it's true. It's terrible. But this was the deal. White families would be able to go out there and work, single job, raise your kids, get a business loan, go to college, participate. You can vote. You go to your union barbecue or so on and so forth. And that was America for a good, maybe even 30 years. Talk about Reagan and whatnot. So I'm sober. Anyway, I know we got to hop off here. But I look at all that and I say, what happened to those guys? What happened to the guys that used to say, I'm going to go to your union barbecue and we're going to get these wages up and I'll be at your union picket line? I know Joe Biden is there, but I got to hop off here. But how do we get back to that? And it's not age, but is it new ideas?
Well, here's what happened to them. Donald Trump and Republicans take the stage. And they say the reason why things are more difficult for you, because that person over there, it's much easier for them. Donald Trump has continuously beat the drum that the economy and that the American dream is in fact zero sum. One of the jobs the Democrats have to do is make it abundantly clear that the pie is not finite. We can grow the pie. And the evidence of that is we've done it before.
Joe Caiso, thank you so much. Last word. And guys, join us next week. We're going to have another guest on here, a staffer from the Sanders campaign, and I look forward to that conversation. Joe, and thank you so much.
Good to see you, and have a safe trip to California.
I will. Good flight. Thank you, Joe. Oh, and tell the family I said hello here. Oh, gosh.
Of course. Good to see you.